Just like that, the final hour has arrived on this Tuesday.
It's already 2 hours in. Are you kidding me? This has flown by today.
Chad, I'll never lie to you.
I thought it was 3 o'clock Central.
Would never lie to you.
And instead, it's 5 o'clock Eastern. See how I did that? That switch right there?
And it's time. That means it's time for you to go to YouTube and subscribe to the Outkick channel.
Oh, yes. I'm already subscribed.
Like, subscribe, share, and join Chad in the chat. Chatting away. What's the chat like today?
Chat's been good today. We've run into one poster's posted the last 5 posts, which I like that level of activity, but we got to get some other people in there posting,
not
responding.
Not a bot.
I'm on that. No.
It's not
David.
Penelope.
He's in here every day. This is a person.
Not Penelope.
Penny, as
Penny,
I like
Penny,
to call
yeah.
her. Penelope Vasquez, who I'm convinced is Sleepy Danny. But I'll talk to him about that another time.
Might be.
I like to call her Penny.
Chad, the Lakers have the Warriors on the brink. Am I foolish for counting out the Warriors and Steph Curry?
You're foolish only because they're about to go home and win because they typically win at home. But I don't think so, Hutton, for this reason. They're miserable on the road.
This is a Lakers team that can win it all.
Yes.
Now, they need – we have certainly seen a back and forth with Anthony Davis, and that took a bit of a turn where he was more consistent after having a nice performance in game three. But here they are up 3-1, returning back to Golden State. And I think this is a Lakers team that can close them out because they've already used the ammunition. They've already used the jet fuel of the speech that it took from Steph Curry the last time to knock out the Kings.
Yeah, it's been crazy. By the way, on cue.
Penelope?
In the YouTube chat, suddenly the woman by the name of Johanna Martinez says hi. I don't think that's by accident.
Thank you, Johanna.
Yeah.
Lonnie Walker, the fourth, last night's fourth quarter, 15 points, I believe, put them over the top.
Well,
they've had role players do this.
You had last night Klay Thompson and Steph Curry go a combined 6-for-25 from three. That clearly cost the Warriors. What else cost them? Stupidity down the stretch. That was terrible by Steph Curry. Late in the game, shot selection was awful. When he had Anthony Davis on him.
Yeah.
And was jacked up 2 terrible shots late. Very un-Steph Curry-like. I thought Klay Thompson shot them out of it a little bit in the fourth quarter as well. Disappointing for the Warriors. They've been terrible on the road. They had a great shot at a win in L.A. last night. I think they'll go back home and win. But I don't think they're winning in L.A. when they go back. So it's going to be a Lakers series win. I believe. I'm with you on it, Hudson.
And what's up with their road woes, man? That makes no sense to me with the mental makeup of this team. And that shot selection, isn't that on Steve Kerr? Or is that just, hey, we're coaching one of the all-time greats, do what you want? Do you have to rein that in at any point? Or
is it
too panic mode if he does that based on, I mean, they win championships doing that?
I don't think if you're Steve Kerr, I'm not going to get on Steve Kerr for not getting on to Steph Curry or Klay Thompson about shot selection. What it is on Steve Kerr, though, to do is talk to them about, hey, you're 2 of the all-time greatest shooters in the history of the game. So I'm not going to sit here and micromanage you and say, you know, don't take this shot from this far out or whatever. But we do need to understand that we can do other things late in the game. When you get a mismatch like Anthony Davis on you, you don't settle for the fadeaway 35-footer in that setting. That is on Steve Kerr to make his guys understand. But I think they will. I mean, Steph Curry's going to adjust. He knows he made a mistake on that shot too.
Yep, and he had a triple double. I mean, he's got great performances. But again, that's the headline for Curry's the triple double and not the shot selection, because we're used to seeing him hit them from the other side of the floor during warmups. I mean, I'm not saying like, oh, take this guy out, but at some point, if you're down 3-1 going into the next matchup, it's like, hey, you've got to be smart about this and let's just get the win. Get it back into a series where we're not on the brink of falling to the Lakers. As I know, and I realize the Warriors are a 6 seed, but they're finally healthy and they've got to get the road game going, which they can't do.
No, Jordan Poole's been a gigantic disappointment in this series. Steph Curry not knowing they had a timeout when he threw the ball over his head to no one after getting the jump ball. Just uncharacteristically dumb plays by the Warriors. Late in that game cost them.
The Knicks, They're trailing the Heat 3-1 now. And let's see, Miami out-rebounded them 44-35. They crushed them on second chance points. And if there was any chance of a Knicks rally, it's them. It was the Heat crashing the boards that allowed them to go 6 from 22 to finish the game, but still win the game and take a 3-1 series lead. Butler is so fun to watch, man.
He is dominant. I mean, he is the best player in the NBA playoffs so far.
I think he's terrific. The most underrated great player in the league.
Yeah.
And that's saying something because they push their superstars. But you don't go to Jimmy Butler for that, right?
No, he's awesome, and he does it quietly. And I don't mean by he doesn't speak.
I know.
His game is not loud and audacious. It's a quiet way of going about
level?
Dominating the game. Yeah, I think that's a good example. Kawhi Leonard's a good comp. But he does it in such a methodical way. And you look up, and he has just filled up the stat sheet.
Yeah,
it's unbelievable. But also, Hutton, he's got humidity and heat on his side, which apparently is a big factor in indoor arenas for the NBA.
So Mike Greenberg said this morning, hey, why are the Knicks struggling? Take a look at the temperature outside the arena.
Particularly from Jalen, was how hard it is to go down to Miami and play this time of year. And I know people will immediately associate that with the nightlife and all that. But according to Jalen, there's more than that. There's also just the reality of the temperature change, the heat, the geography, being down there for 3 days. It sort of saps a little bit of your energy and your strength. We talk about that primarily in football. I know this is an indoor sport. But, I mean, the Knicks, whatever it is, Jimmy Butler is just has just destroyed them.
Yeah, so, I mean, what zaps you of your energy is going out all night and taking in the nightlife of Miami. I don't feel sorry for guys playing in an air-conditioned arena in Florida. Zapping of energy.
Well, and it's also, you know, the geography. What about the geography? There are way further flights. I'm going to give a geography. Me, Chad Withrow, fifth grade geography B champion, from Glayville Elementary. That's a true fact. I want to give Mike Greenberg a little geography lesson. There are places that are geographically further away from New York City than Miami that would be a rougher flight to get to and geographically could be tougher. Like, I don't know, say a Denver, if they were ever to make it back to an NBA Finals and take on the Nuggets. That would be geographically a lot different because of altitude and mountains and also further mileage to travel into. Flying from New York and Miami is not a big geographical feat. And you get down there. I've been in South Florida and Miami. It's very flat. You're not walking around a lot of hills. So I'm not sure about the geography of what he's talking about. There's definitely scenery that's different than a lot of places in America.
A lot of head turning.
But give me a break. I mean, he says, yeah. I know about, you know, people are going to point to the nightlife. And well, yeah, if you're experiencing the Miami nightlife on South Beach, then your play the next night is going to be affected. I don't know that these guys are doing that. They could be in their hotel room all the time. But here's the deal. Their hotel rooms have, wait for it, air conditioning that would protect them from the heat and humidity. This is a lazy and dumb argument by Mike Greenberg. Maybe one of the dumbest I've ever heard.
Oh, and they're missing Hero and Oladipo, by the way, the Heat.
I mean, come on.
Yeah, it's
the
ridiculous.
Geography and the heat and the weather and zapping their energy.
I've said on the show this week, I'm paying attention to Nuggets Suns because now we've got a little... I'm intrigued in how Jokic responds, and we'll get to his fine in a moment. But is the coverage of why the Suns sucked in Denver, the altitude? Is Greenberg saying the same thing there? Which is a factor, no matter if it's air conditioned or not in the arena.
I just want to take this moment to applaud Jokic for playing so well, given how he had to go from the geography of altitude to a desert, to go to Phoenix and put up 53 in a desert like
it's
that.
It's a dry heat, though, Chad.
I mean, come on. Like, not only is this guy fighting the Suns crowd and the Suns owner, who's ripping the ball from him and he's getting a technical on, but the dude's out there playing in a desert the whole time. You know how dry that heat is and how just dry mouth you're going to get when you play? What a just heroic performance by Jokic. This will be next on ESPN with Mike Greenberg. This will be the next argument. It's so dumb.
Jokic
and Jalen Rose also argued this,
by the way
about the weather.
I know.
Come on.
Of course he did.
You're really searching for. These are highly paid professional athletes in tip-top shape.
Yeah,
I don't think a walk from their hotel
benefiting
room...
benefiting from load management.
I mean, think about this also. If they really... If that was an issue, if they were to go on the road to Miami and they were all to a man to say, This damn weather has zapped our energy. They have the ability to stay in an air-conditioned hotel suite and go right from that room down to a buffet in a meeting area or some banquet hall in their hotel, back up to their room. So what you're telling me is the walk from their hotel to the team bus and then from the team bus to wherever the practice facility is and or arena
yeah.
is so taxing physically because of the weather and geography that it has yeah. zapped their energy.
And the weight of whatever they're wearing.
That is the wardrobe. Ludicrous. What a terrible argument.
They've got Project Runway every night.
Yeah, I mean, if the weather's so zapping, stay in your room the entire time. You have the ability to do that unless you're at a shoot-around or at the game.
Jokic is not getting off scot-free, but it's a slap on the wrist, a $25,000 fine. I think we mentioned this yesterday.
He shouldn't have been fined, though.
Well, but based on the optics of what happened here, Chad, let me just... Jokic, if he's not fined, and you have Ishbia who's saying don't fine him, you know exactly what the headlines on ESPN are. Because we've already seen it. Racism. Got black players getting fined for doing things with fans. And they're admitting that the owner's a fan. And we're not going to fine Jokic. I can hear it now. I can hear J.J. Redick trying to defend the argument that whatever is on first take. Just like I heard about the MVP.
Yeah.
The NBA had to fine him something. And this guy, you know, pisses $25,000. So I'm not overly concerned with the fine as much as I am. The NBA did this for optics.
Yeah, you're right. Someone would have argued, man, if this was, you know, Rasheed Wallace in his heyday, he would have been thrown out of the league for getting into an altercation with an NBA owner or courtside. So I can see that part of it. I also think, you know, you say it's basically couch money, pocket change for these guys,
yeah.
which it is. It's also that for the NBA.
What's a tax write-off?
When you're talking about $25,000, and I'm thinking...
The tax write-off.
Yeah, I just, at my core, I'm opposed to optics things. And I know this is what it is, but it's just such a dumb...
At their core, at the league's core, they're not opposed to that.
No, in a big business in general, I understand, is all about that. But it just seems so stupid.
And Ishbia admitted that.
$25,000.
You had the NBA owner saying, hey, I don't think you should be fined or suspended. And it's not like he was suspended. I mean, I think that's the thing, is no harm, no foul. And that's exactly how it should have been handled yesterday, the day after. And it's even after, the morning after, we had Jokic and what others from the team say, oh, yeah, about what happened over there. You're talking about the fan? Pointing out Ishbia. They knew who he was. So Ishbia still said all that afterwards. I applaud both sides of this, honestly. I thought it was handled well, and I thought the league, for you know, optic purposes, it's not like they came over the top. This is a slap on the wrist. A $25,000 fine. Consider what players have been fined for just you know missing a game, or a team has been fined for load management whenever ABC and ESPN want the primetime game in the best slot on Sunday afternoon. And they're finding teams for sitting players on the road. I don't take this as much of anything other than the NBA agrees with Matt Ishbia and Nikola Jokic.
Do you think that Adam Silver talked to Jokic about this and said...
I don't even think it was Adam Silver who devies his fine. Isn't it the former Piston who does this?
No, it's Joe Dumars. But I'm saying, do you think in this case that Adam Silver, because it was so high profile, just talked to him and said, hey, you're getting a $25,000 fine... Because that's what we have to do in this setting.
Can you imagine Kendrick Perkins today?
But we don't really care.
Imagine Kendrick Perkins today.
Yeah, he's got that. That opinion was floating in there for sure.
It had to be.
Yeah.
It had to be. Hit us up with your thoughts. You can join us in the chat on OutKick with the YouTube channel. So the other headlines that are out there today. So the Brewers are saying they're taking a reverse course on extending built beer sales. So we had mentioned the games are faster in Major League Baseball, and because of that, they're extending beer sales because they're not having as many beer sales. The problem with, at least from the Brewers' perspective, is it was averaging out to about an extra 15-minute window of keeping it open from the seventh inning until the eighth inning, and they were not seeing tremendous jumps in sales when they can actually cut their people working in the concessions then... And it would be more financially beneficial for them. They're not saying this. This is the truth, though. This is why your hotel doesn't wash your towels every day. They're saving money on that. They're not saving the environment. They're just pointing to that as the reason. The Brewers are saying, hey, we're actually not selling that much because it's the eighth inning and fans are preparing for their drive home, so they're not going to buy.
You mean fans got tired of $17 beer night and decided that maybe the sixth inning beer was the last one they're going to have?
I don't know if fans are tired of it, but fans line up and pay for it.
Yeah.
Have you seen the lines at last call in the seventh inning?
No doubt. I've seen it at second intermission of hockey games also.
10-minute mark. No doubt.
People are running in there to get it before the third period starts.
Yeah.
This is a change of convenience that they had one major league player speak out and say, hey, this is not a great idea to just continue beer sales and send people home.
Well, that was a couple weeks ago.
And on their way.
This is
exactly what I'm saying. Convenient that they had the one guy speak out, and then two weeks later, when they try it out and show that they're not making a ton of money off of it, they can claim moral high ground and say, you know what, that player was right, guys. We're going to step away from this and not do it. And in reality, it's all about the money.
Yeah. Well, the moral high ground would be, well, we're just not going to extend sales because we want you to get home safe.
Well, the moral high ground would have also been, you know what, we're going to do the sixth inning now. We're going to take an inning off of it. You know what, that player's right. We're going from the eighth, screw the sixth, to the fifth. We're cutting beer sales off in the fifth inning because he is so right. That, I could teach a class.
You know, we're the Brewers.
On winning the moral high ground.
We're the Brewers, but we're going to sell old duels.
As the Milwaukee Brewers, first off, we need to change that name. Write that down. If the Cleveland Indians can become the Cleveland Guardians, then by God, the Milwaukee Brewers can change their name too. And also, as moral high ground chief priest is what I'm going to call myself now, not only are we going to go back to the seventh inning and stop beer sales, we're going to go to the fifth inning as the Milwaukee Brewers, and we're going to lead the way
right
morally
as our starter leaves the mound.
In Major League Baseball.
When our starter leaves the mound, final call.
This is the final decree from moral high ground chief priest Chad Withrow. You're welcome.
Final thing, speaking of money, I was watching the F1 race here at 6th and Peabody with some friends who are diehards, diehard F1 racing fans, more than just the show. They travel internationally. And I asked them, I'm like, financially, like, tell me behind the scenes what's going on here. And he said, let me put this in perspective for you, Hutt. The two drivers for Red Bull or any of the two for any team, the money that is spent on that one race combined is more than a NASCAR season for a team running the full circuit. That is incredible to me. The billions that go into F1. Did you know they can't refuel during a race? Because the engine runs so hot?
Well,
I didn't know that until
Sunday. I've watched a season and a half of Drive to Survive, so that's the extent of my knowledge of it. But a huge theme in that show, which is what you're hitting on, is the money wins. That it's really hard. These teams have a lot of money, but the ones, the Mercedes, Ferrari, Red Bull, the ones at the top from a money standpoint, it's really difficult for those bottom-level teams to compete. And there's only, I think there's 10 teams of two. There's 20 drivers in every race.
And about four guys who can win.
And we're talking about 10 teams. Mm-hmm. But those bottom two or three are always, kind of like Major League Baseball in some ways, always strapped to compete. Because they don't have the money.
Great story coming up with former offensive coordinator of the NFL, now head coach of the New Orleans Breakers, John DeFilippo, who was told by a couple of doctors he may not walk unassisted ever again. And then he trotted out as the head coach of the Breakers in what was a very emotional scene. We'll hit that topic, and we'll dive into some of the quarterbacks he's coached throughout his career. That's all straight ahead on Hot Mic. Hot Mic, Hutton and Withrow rolls on across the Outkick Network. Chad, Robert De Niro is 79 years old, and he's welcoming his seventh child. He's confirming that he's going to be a father for a seventh time at 79.
I don't know whether to be impressed or frightened for
maybe,
Robert De Niro and the child.
Props to Bob.
In New York over the weekend, we were in Robert De Niro's neighborhood at one point and almost walked over to his building. Well, I was Googling where he lives.
You'd be babysitting.
I watched over that. I could have been handed a child to say, right. take this child around the neighborhood, please.
John DeFilippo is the head coach of the New Orleans Breakers, and they're off to a 4-0 start, doing some winning, and that's certainly what DeFilippo did as an offensive coordinator, quarterback coach, and more. Great to have you on, Coach, and congrats on the great start to the season.
I appreciate it, guys. It's great to be here.
We referenced right before you jumped on the emotional scene of jogging onto the field as the head coach of the Breakers. Based on what doctors had told you, where you may not, they, at least two of them that I was reading about at the time told you, you may not walk unassisted ever again. What exactly happened, and what was it like to coach, not just coach the Breakers on that day on April 16th, but to actually think, you know what, I want to run out here by myself unassisted, and it's going to prove a point to me mentally and show everyone that I'm overcoming this.
Absolutely. And it was an emotional day. It still is for me when I think about it, because I was in so much pain for a long time. It was just great to be able to run. And I'll never forget that night when I got that call, and the doctors were telling me I would probably never walk without a walker again. I called my parents and I said, that's not going to happen. I said, I will run out of that field for our first game. And, I did. And, I was proud of myself, but I was just for the, you know, the mental toughness it took to keep fighting this, what I have, on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah. And explain what happened. By the way, you should be proud. I mean, I don't think you should hesitate.
Absolutely.
In saying that. Getting the phone call and the sudden, you know, just a drain of that, you know, trying to realize what this is. What are you dealing with, Coach?
I have this condition called ankylosing spondylitis, and it basically what it does is I have a very severe arthritic spine, and so what it does it affects your joints. It picks joints in your body randomly that it wants to affect. My condition happened to pick my right foot, and the night I entered the Mayo Clinic, my right foot was almost twice the size of my left one, and it was going up my leg, the swelling and the pain. I wasn't able to walk for really pretty much the previous 2.5-3 months at all, without a walker or a wheelchair or a scooter. And so I was very fortunate that I live right outside of Jacksonville, Florida, and I got a chance to go to the Mayo Clinic, and the doctors there were just awesome. They're still taking great care of me, you know, via Zoom, like I'm doing with you guys here.
Yep.
And they're with me every step of the way. And I can't thank Dr. Sullivan and her team enough for, number one, finding out what I have, but number two, being so gracious and kind in treating me.
Did this happen during the year off from football, or was this prior to that? Like, what led to all this? How fast did this come on?
It came on pretty quick. Right around Christmas time, right before Christmas, I was putting on my shoe, and it was like, man, my foot hurts. It's weird. It's like, it was just an annoying pain. And it just kept getting worse and worse and worse, and kept getting swelled. The swelling kept getting a lot worse. They thought I had gout for a while, and then the gout medicine wasn't helping. And, you know, I was in and out of the hospital and, you know, getting all kinds of MRIs and CAT scans. And, you know, finally, when I was in the Mayo, the rheumatology people saw a little smudge on my pelvis that they didn't like. It was literally like almost like a fingerprint smudge. And they said, there's something about that we don't like. And so they put me actually in the MRI machine for over 2 hours. I was fully enclosed for over 2 hours without a break. And they did a full back MRI spine on me. And then they found out what I had. My pelvis, and my low back is very, very inflamed.
John DeFilippo, our guest on Hot Mic with Hutton Withrow.
Well, best of luck moving forward with that.
Yeah.
And congrats on being able to do this so far and making as far as you have throughout this season.
And coaching. Yeah.
And coaching and being on the sideline and everything else is really cool to see.
Thank you.
Dealing with that on top of being a first-year coach in this league with guys who are coming back for a second year that have been around for the experience, what has that challenge been like for you entering this league in year two with some other guys who had that one-year head start?
Sure. I'll tell you what. The first thing that I did as a head coach is the smartest move I made is I hired a bunch of people that are a lot smarter than me and know a lot more football than me. So, I mean – if you look down the roster of our coaching staff, it's unbelievable. The amount of experience we have. And that was the first, I guess, smart thing I did was hiring guys that are really good football coaches. And so they're doing a great job. Putting guys in places to have success, and we're flying around and our guys are having fun. That's what the best part is as a head coach. I want to make sure that our guys are having a good time. We work when it's time to work. It's time to keep it light. We keep it light. and make sure that this is an enjoyable work environment for everybody involved. So that was the ground, what we tried to establish from a philosophical standpoint. And then our guys have just bought in. They've done an unbelievable job of buying in. And this is a player's game 100%. It's a professional football is a player's game. So they've done an unbelievable job of buying in and playing.
We've had Daryl Moose Johnson on the show a bunch of times, and he doesn't duck from the fact that a lot of these guys, their end goal is the NFL. You know, they're playing professional football now, and there are team goals and individual goals within the season. But the ultimate goal for these guys is to make it on an NFL roster. How much do you talk about that with your NFL experience? How much does that come up with guys that you're coaching throughout this season, and you're talking to them and trying to help them one day reach that ultimate goal?
Great question. The first thing we do is we have an NFL schedule. So from a practice standpoint, how long we're on the field, when our players come in the morning, when they leave, it's exactly what the NFL is from an hour standpoint. We don't add plays if we're early, getting off the field. When the players, I tell the guys, hey guys, when the script's up, the script's up. So as fast as you guys want to practice, shoot, there's some days we're off the field 25 minutes, half an hour early. Because our guys are flying around. So that's the number one thing we try to do. The first day I got up in front of the team, this is unlike any other experience I've ever been in, because we have no OTAs, no mini camps. I told the guys, I hope we have 58 new faces here next year. That means we did our job and you guys are off to bigger and better things. So I get it. I've been there. I've been fortunate to win a Super Bowl, been fortunate enough to be at the top of the mountain and have that experience. And I hope everybody has that chance one day. And that's what we're trying to do here.
The impact of Wes Hills is, he's, 8 touchdowns in 4 games in this 4-0 start. He's averaging nearly 100 yards rushing per game. You're throwing the football to him out of the backfield. To what Chad is saying, and we saw this last year from USFL to training camps, this is a guy that looks like an NFL-type player.
Yes, Wes is doing a great job. And the thing he's improving on every week as well, which is key to being a running back in the NFL and in all professional football, is pass protection. You saw him Sunday get some great chips on guys. He's running the football hard. He's catching the football. It's not always pretty, but he's catching it. And he's doing a heck of a job. And Wes is one of those guys that just – he's the first guy, like when we have look squad on special teams, that we need a guy to jump in there. You almost have to save him from himself at practice to make sure that, he gets to the game. And that's why he's having success. I'm a big believer in practice and practice speed, and how you practice really is the way you play.
John DeFilippo, our guest, he's the head coach of the New Orleans Breakers in the USFL. Week 5 is coming up this weekend on Fox and NBC. I want to get your take on some quarterbacks you've been around, either as a coordinator or a coach, and just name recognition, if you don't mind. I won't hit all of them. But
sure.
Nick Foles recently released, but got his – what you guys did in the run for the Super Bowl when Wentz went down, you were around behind the scenes. How do you describe Nick Foles and that postseason?
Nick is a big believer in himself in a good way. He has great faith, in terms of in his heart. And he has – if you get Nick's trust, if you earn his trust, there's nothing Nick can't do. He trusts the plan. He trusts the coaches. He trusts his teammates. He's a great person off the field. One of the best people I've ever been around. Naturally, a great person, great father, a great son. Nick's just a guy that does a lot of things really good. I've been fortunate enough. I brought Nick with me down to Jacksonville and to Chicago. So he and I have a very, very special relationship, and been through a lot of highs and a lot of lows together. So, when you go through those experiences with somebody, you have a very unique relationship with them.
I'll set up the next guy by describing this. Normally, when a wide receiver is having one of the all-time best seasons we've ever seen, the quarterback gets the credit for the passing yards and everything behind it. It was all about Justin Jefferson, and it wasn't about Kirk Cousins this past season in Minnesota. What is Cousins like behind the scenes versus the perception that we all have, where if this is happening with the top quarterbacks in the league, that dude's an MVP candidate, not the wide receiver?
Hey, Kirk can make every single throw with ease. When we first got Kirk, I did not think the ball was going to jump off his hand like it did. I told him that. man, you can drive the football. And he's an un, he, the thing about Kirk, too, people don't give him enough credit for. I'm not sure Kirk's ever missed a game. And he's not the biggest guy in the world. I'm not sure he's ever missed a game in professional football. So the first thing about being a great player is being available.
There's a talent to that. Yeah.
Absolutely. And so, I mean, talk about a guy that's smart, can drive the ball, can make every throw, can change his arm angle. I mean, Kirk is an unbelievable passer. So I really enjoyed working with him.
Describe.
I gave credit where credit's due to Kirk.
Yeah.
I mean, people don't realize this about Kirk Cousins. The year he and I were together, he's the only player in the history of the NFL for 4,000 yards, complete 70% of his balls, have 30 or more touchdowns and 10 or less interceptions in the history of the league. So, I mean, I agree. Kirk doesn't get the love that he deserves.
And he's set up in a good spot now with Aaron Rodgers in the AFC. Gardner Minshew.
Love him. Oh my goodness. Oh, what a guy to be around on an everyday basis. I mean, and I'll tell you, I thought like the gene cutoff jeans and all that was like just like a shtick, you know. That's his deal. That's real. And he is as real a guy. I tell you, talk about a guy that players love to play with. Oh my goodness, Gardner Minshew. And dynamic personality. Dynamic. And just an unbelievable guy to be around every day.
One more for you. What is a new spot, a new organization going to mean for Derek Carr?
You know, I had Derek as a rookie. I think change is going to be beneficial for both sides. You know, sometimes things just take their course in pro football, and it's you have an amicable split, and those things happen. So I'm really excited. The thing about Derek too is, which I don't know if it's mentioned out there enough, but obviously he and Dennis Allen have a background as well together because Dennis drafted him in Oakland. So there's going to be some ease there with the head coach as long as with that transition to a new city and a new organization.
Hey, Coach, also congrats because your game on Sunday afternoon on NBC had 828,000 viewers, and that was up against NBA, NHL playoffs, golf, and a Formula One event going on. So that was the highest since week one of a year ago. It was a really good weekend for the USFL and television ratings. So that's always important. I know you're not thinking about that when you're coaching the team, but congrats on that as well as your team.
That is awesome, awesome news. And you know, there's a lot of people that have worked their tails off to make that happen. I mean, you talk about Moose Johnston and Jim Popp, and those guys have just worked their tails off, you know, to accomplish that. So kudos to everyone in our league for those numbers. That's fantastic news.
Saturday schedule week 5 starts on USA, and it's followed by a Fox broadcast with Houston and Birmingham at Protective Stadium. Sunday schedule is where Coach DeFilippo is involved. You've got 11 a.m. kickoff Central, noon Eastern on NBC and Peacock for New Jersey and Philly, followed by on Fox, Memphis and New Orleans. That's a 3 o'clock Eastern kickoff to local there in Birmingham. There's got to be a great story to end on. I'm picking this one. If you've got a better one, fill it in, but this has to hit a home run. You're interning with the Colts, and Peyton Manning takes all the rookies out to dinner, and he asked you to join. Where did he take you? And there has to be a story behind why he invited the intern along with the rookies.
He took us to, oh my gosh, it was a rib place in Anderson, Indiana. Okay, because we were in Anderson, Indiana. Oh my gosh, if you said it, I'd know it, but I can picture it like yesterday. And actually, Peyton picked me up from like my dorm room. drove me. I got to sit like in his passenger seat. Okay. And talk about an unbelievable experience for a guy that's in college, and Peyton could have been more gracious. The coolest part of that story was it was the night of the Hall of Fame game, all right? And I'm sitting there eating ribs and having a beer with Peyton Manning, thinking, this guy's going to be enshrined one day. I'm literally watching the Hall of Fame enshrinement next to a guy that's going to be enshrined one day. And just an unbelievable person. I got to be around his brother, Eli, when I was quality control with the Giants for 2 years. Just an unbelievable family, all about football, all about family. They're just an incredible group of people.
Chad was once the taste tester for a shot that was given to Peyton on Broadway.
Yeah, I went to Tennessee and I saw Peyton in a bar in Nashville, and I bought him a shot, and I tried to say from one vol to another, and Jeff Saturday was with him. I'm not joking, and took the shot and tasted it first, as a good offensive lineman would, and then hands Peyton. Then we cheers.
That's amazing.
That. I think I actually bought one for Jeff Saturday. It's all a little fuzzy. I bought one for Jeff Saturday also and said, here are the shots I'm giving. Gave him one. He took it and said, yeah, it's fine. And then Peyton took one with me. So it was great. I didn't get to eat ribs with him, but, you know, it's the next best
thing. Did you interview directly with Bill Polian for that internship?
Well, what had happened was I had interned the year before for the Carolina Panthers, where Mr. Polian was the GM
there.
Okay,
got you.
And so this was back pre-email. So I wrote him a handwritten note thanking him for allowing me the opportunity to be a coach's intern there.
And he wrote me back
and he said, this was right before he made the move to Indy. He goes, hey, you have another internship with me wherever I am. Okay. And I was like, no, wherever you are. I go, that's weird. And so like a week later, they announced he was going to Indianapolis. So I went to Indianapolis because I was trying to, again, like anybody in any intern would try to build your network. And so I was trying, it allowed me a chance to meet a whole new staff and try to impress a whole new staff. And so that's why I turned down the Panthers to go to the Colts here too.
John DeFilippo has been our guest. USFL back in week 5 this upcoming weekend. He's the head coach of the New Orleans Breakers. You can check them out on Sunday in the full slate available at theusfl.com. Coach, it's been a pleasure. Hopefully we can catch up soon and talk more quarterbacks and more as the season progresses.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun. Thanks for having me on. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, Coach.
Appreciate you, man. And congrats on everything going so well thus far with everything behind the scenes there at the clinic, the nurses, the doctors, everybody. It's awesome. And great story there. Uplifting, for sure,
yep.
Chad. And if you haven't seen the video, you should go check it out. You can find it at outkick.com, but you can also search on YouTube while you're watching the show or right after the show where he's jogging out. He's got the boot on. He's jogging out. And the emotion is it's powerful. To say the least.
The only thing we have in common in terms of our football lives is that we both got to drink with Peyton Manning at one point.
You achieved the sports fan's dream.
Yeah, it was very different. Mine was different than his, but I wasn't riding shotgun with him on the way to the rib house to have beers with him, but bought him a shot either way.
Coming up, Chad and I do some taste testing for the Craft Brewers Conference that's in town here in Nashville with Yeehaw Brewing Company, one of our hosts here at 6th and Peabody, along with Old Smoky Moonshine. And there's a familiar face with the NBA who recently passed away that will tie in with the Cleveland Cavaliers and the impact that he had in such a short amount of time of his life. That's next on Hot Mic. Glad you're with us. 6th and Peabody, our location with Yeehaw Beer and Old Smoky Moonshine. We'll be tasting some of the Yeehaw brews on tap here all week for the Craft Brewing Conference, which is off to a great success. Packed with people across the globe. Suppliers, vendors, brewers, and they do it great here with Yeehaw across the state of Tennessee and South Carolina.
We've got two more to try here today.
Yeah, we do. In just a moment. But so, Chad, Nick Gilbert was 14-year-old Nick Gilbert at the time, son of the Cleveland Cavaliers owner, asked what's not to like whenever he was asked about, you know, why his dad chose him as his hero. He suffered from NF1, and there is no cure. He passed away over the weekend. But he was always the person that was representing the Cavs for the NBA draft lottery.
Yep.
And he had this luck to him, you know, where they would end up with, they didn't always have the best odds for the number one pick or the number two pick, but they'd end up getting that pick. You know, and top pick went to Nick. And the awareness and the fundraising that went behind the diagnosis and the disease that he suffered from, a genetic condition. And it causes like non-cancerous tumors to grow in the brain and the spinal cord. No cure. And he passed away at 26 over the weekend. By the way, let me share the story real quick. My grandparents, my grandmother passed away last year. Final grandparent to pass away. Grandfather died in 2019. We auctioned off their estate. We had an estate sale over the weekend. And I think the big fear with that was, oh, there's going to be someone that comes in, It's a 7-acre plot of land. Maybe they take down the home that they built, you know, and they either...
The family farm home.
Yeah, well, yeah. They for them, it wasn't the farm. It was just their land. And it's like, oh, they bulldozed the house and they somehow, you know, they either farm it or they turn it into a subdivision or whatever, you know. Not the case. There was a gentleman who was all about wanting to see the home for a couple of weeks. Crawling underneath the house to see the, you know, the good bone structure, right?
Going into the crawl space.
Turns out he was living in a 900 square foot home. He and his wife and five kids. And they bought this house, 3-bedroom, 2-bathroom. I mean, it's a small house. And the tears on their faces, and they were boasting about now having 2 bathrooms, puts things in perspective.
Yeah.
For all of the clickbait material that's out there, and everyone wanting to live through whatever's viral at the moment, and putting a headline at the bottom of a screen so that someone will click on it, to me, that was real. And it put things in perspective for me of, you know what, you know, comparing this to that, someone's always got it better than you, and there are tons of people that have it worse than you. And for that day, that family had a better day than I did, and for no reason whatsoever, I went into that day better off than they were.
Yeah.
But they had a better day.
Well, it's a great story, and one that also proves that something bad happened with your grandmother passing away.
Right.
And that's a tragic thing for family, regardless of age.
Well, and the decision
especially for,
with the property.
Especially
you know?
For your mom and her sister, right?
Right.
And all
yep,
the
no
memories
doubt.
Of that property. And the fear is, oh, this is going to lead to such a bad thing. It's going to be sold to a developer. Someone's going to come in and tear the house down, and it leads to a great thing. So out of the tragedy of that loss, something great spawned for that family, and now a bunch of memories for that family that's moving in. Very cool.
And his name's John. He sent a text that said, my kids haven't stopped talking about the house today. With the house for my wife and now the bowl, he wanted his mother to have this bowl for Mother's Day. I'm set for the best Mother's Day of my life. Thank you for the legacy of happy memories that we will inherit within those walls.
That's awesome.
That was perfect.
Yeah.
It was a perfect weekend. So cheers to the new family at Sunny Acres. And cheers to Yeehaw
Cheers to
Brewery.
John.
So
is
this
name?
Right this right here, cheers to John.
John.
Yeah. So this right here, Chad, if we get this right, is the Hip Hop's Hazy IPA from Greenville, South Carolina. 100% Carolina malt. And it's hopped with a New Zealand hop. A soft mouthfeel, it says, with tropical flavors and aromas. Your thoughts?
I was going to say this tastes a little bit like Flight of the Conchords. It's from New Zealand. So, delicious.
I like that. I like that. The Hip Hop's Hazy IPA, New England style. And to the right, we have the Citrus Slapper IPA. It's a fruited IPA. Chad? This is the tangy tangerine finish.
Mm.
Bold citrus hops with a note of tangerine.
Mm. Oh, this I can taste the tangerine.
Are you allergic?
No, I wasn't expecting breakfast when I sipped it. I feel like I'm at like a high-end breakfast in a hotel somewhere.
Chad's now going
serving
to have
some sort of fruit juice.
He's going to have an allergic reaction. I'm going to stab him with an EpiPen.
All right, guys, this will be my final show. I'll die after drinking the rest of this. Good night, everyone. No, this is good.
A good way to end it. And thanks to Yeehaw for making what's been a fun week happen for us, where we can try the different things for all of their locations.
Cheers, Sutton.
Yeah, cheers, Chad. Appreciate you and all the great staff.
Cheers to John and the family of five moving into the house.
So you've got the Craft Brewers Conference going on, but you have locations for Yeehaw, Nashville, Greenville, Johnson City, Knoxville. Check them out wherever you are. Across those two states, and you can find it on retail throughout the country. We're back right here at 6th and Peabody, home of Yeehaw Beer and Old Smoky Moonshine, 3 o'clock Eastern tomorrow across the Outkick Network.